Did wasps come from another planet? If you say Bloody Mary three times into a mirror, does she have to stop what she's already doing to come and kill you? Answers to these questions and more on this episode of This Paranormal Life!
Hey!
Welcome back to the podcast. It is Tuesday once again. You are listening to This Paranormal Life. Today you are joined by myself, Mr. Kit Greer. This guy, Mr. Roy Powers.
Hello, hello.
Both very esteemed professional paranormal investigators.
Oh yeah.
Decades on the job. And here we are in the golden years of our career, phoning it in.
Absolutely. People always ask me how professional I am. I sleep in a freaking tie. I shower in a tie. I'm always ready.
That is
ready.
All you're wearing, though, which is deeply unprofessional.
To show you I'm all about the business.
Granted, it's 6 feet long, so it covers the important bits, but...
If it covers the important bits, it's going to need to be 10 feet long. You catch my drift here?
No.
You catch my drift?
No, this thing barely
You catch my drift here? I'm saying
crotch,
I have a hog. I'm saying I have a hog and I'm a businessman.
Is that the two things you aspire to be most?
Yeah.
Well, with that said and done, ladies and gentlemen, we are not going to dilly-dally. As always, like every episode, we're just going to dive right in. And today's story takes us somewhere we just do not spend enough time on This Paranormal Life. That's right, we're talking Edo period Japan.
Wow.
That's right, too many paranormal tales take place in places that we expect them to, like in the Midwest, in the 90s. Someone sees something weird, but they're too drunk to hold a camera still for long enough to get some evidence. And way too few cases involve the era of the samurai, the era of the geisha, the shogun. So thankfully, we're going to correct that today and wind back the clock all the way to 1803 Hitachi Province.
Ooh, I love that it's going to be such a change of scenery. And you'll be like, so the young samurai Miyazaki said, well, I'm going to have a glass of sake. It's like, so we're still doing the redneck voices. Well, yeah.
Miyazaki jumped into his pickup. I thought you said we were in 1800s Japan. That's what they called a rickshaw back then. A pickup, because he had to pick it up off the ground. Get it? It's February 22nd, and two fishermen are doing whatever it is that fishermen do off the beaches of Haratonohama. You'll notice that my pronunciation is superbly educated.
I'm
a very educated person. I've spent, well, actually not a lot of time in Japan. I actually did like an airport stopover. I'll come clean. I tried to get into the country. They took one look at my passport, my police record, and actually just sent me right back. So I was in Japan for probably about 30 minutes.
It really wasn't a long time.
Enough time, however, to master the Japanese language back to front.
You tried to get into the country through airport security in a kimono with a katana.
Yeah, I had actually shaved on the flight. I went into the bathroom, plugged my little electric razor into that thing, and shaved my hair like Tokugawa era shogunate style.
Yeah.
Just like little ponytail.
I think that's a red flag already, because I don't think you're supposed to plug anything into those.
And this thing was a doozy as well. This was like an industrial, like, this is what you shave a bear with in a circus.
Do they do that? Why? How did you get that on the plane? How did they let you leave the country with that? You're in the toilet of the aeroplane, covered your face in shaving cream, and you're just using the edge of the katana blade to shave your face. The plane is shaking. You're nicking yourself left, right, and center. There's blood everywhere.
People on the outside of the bathroom stall are knocking on the door. Usually you're kind of listening out to hear if the hand dryer is going, or maybe if the toilet's flushing.
Right.
All they were hearing was... They were hearing throwing stars.
Yeah, shuriken coming through the door.
Just hearing, shit. The samurai must have been bleeding a lot. That was me. It didn't work out. But like I say, I did spend just enough time there to nail some pronunciation. So I think I'm well set up for this story.
So I think the story is going to be gonky des. So that's so wrong.
That's right. February 22nd. It's a misty day. And the two fishermen are just shooting the shit, Edo period style, while casting their lines into the waters. I guess one of them is gazing into the distance when they spot something on the horizon. Hey, what's bobbing around out there? They strain their eyes and just about make out in the mist that, yes, there is some kind of boat drifting in the water.
Oh.
Huh, maybe someone's in trouble out there. So the two men row out to this mysterious boat. But the closer they get, the less sure they are about what they're even looking at. About 3 meters high, around 5 meters wide, it was pretty tiny as far as boats go. The fishermen reported that the boat looked like its upper half was made of a red kind of wood, but its lower half was made of some kind of metal.
Ooh.
everything about it was not Japanese. Right off the bat, this boat was circular, and boats are not usually very circular.
That's checks out.
Additionally, the top half was covered in window panels made of glass and crystal. Especially unusual, as at this time, glass was definitely not a commonly used material in Japan. You had to be, like, real high society to have glassware.
That escalated really quickly. It was like it wasn't in the Japanese style of architecture at all. Also, it had glass windows, a fuel tank, rockets strapped to the side, a gray in the dashboard.
That's
waving.
Right. Worried that if anyone inside needed help, the men towed the boat back to shore. They tied it up and started rowing back to the beach. As they reached dry land, they peered in through the glass and crystal windows. Inside, the walls were lined with text in an unknown language they had never seen before. And on the ground of this craft, they spotted what looked like a bed of some kind. Some sheets, and beside that, there was a little container of, looked like liquid water, and pieces of some kind of cake or bread, some kind of food anyway.
You got a little, someone's living in this thing.
Yeah, someone's okay. In there for the long haul. It was then that the man saw something else. A woman.
Oh,
not just any woman, the most beautiful woman they had ever seen.
Whoa, jackpot.
The day every Edo period man is waiting for. Time a hot bride washes up on shore like a goddamn message in a bottle.
It's so true. The amount of days they go out there and, you know, there's a big tug on the old fishing rod.
Mm-hmm,
they
mm-hmm,
wheel mm-hmm. out this giant, huge bass. And they're like, just another fish. Just chuck it back in the water. Because they're just looking for that dream wife. That's what they're doing.
That's
out
right.
There. You know, they say like plenty of fish in the sea. There's too many. There's actually not that many girls in the sea.
Yeah, there's too many. They're getting in the way of the good stuff, really. Because if you're looking for anything other than fish, you're going to be hard-pressed.
Absolutely.
She was about 5 foot tall. I mean, which is funny to be like, the most beautiful woman we've ever seen. 4'9".
Beard to her knees.
Foot size 12.
Jacked. Angry. Small.
Actually,
loud.
Mostly an angry mythical dwarf creature.
Face and claws of a little bear, but voice of a large bear.
I hate to see her go, but I love to watch her walk away. The most beautiful person they'd ever seen. 5 foot tall, long red hair with white extensions that they thought was either made of fur or some kind of fabric. Her pale pink features of her face were strikingly beautiful, and she wore long flowing clothes made of unknown fabrics. She turned to the fishermen and tried to speak, but it was a language they'd never heard before. She could understand them no better than they could understand her. For the fishermen, almost the most intriguing thing was that amidst all this, she was holding a small box made of a weird pale material that they didn't recognize. And although the men tried to ask her about it and gesture to it, she would not let them anywhere near this thing.
Right.
The story goes that the woman did not travel beyond the beach in Hitachi province. Rather that the men basically tried to talk to her for a bit, put her boat back together, and just sent her back on her way, drifting down the sea to wherever she planned on arriving. So put yourself in the shoes of these fishermen for just a second. What are you thinking right off the bat about this occurrence?
This is mad. Well, to start, I don't think I would have towed the boat back to shore.
Oh,
before,
really?
Before knowing exactly what was in the boat and what was going on. Because I feel like pirating 101. I know they're not fishermen, but, you know, they're kind of like pirates. If you're, like, out on the sea and you find, like, a little bit of, like, a ghost ship or, like, an abandoned ship, what you do is, you know, you go inside and you pillage it, see what you can get, see what the situation is.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hook onto it and, like, drag it back to your harbor and then be like, let's see what's inside. Because you could have a straight-up Trojan fish on your hands.
Very true.
Yeah.
You could.
God knows what's inside that thing. Luckily, it was just a tiny little beautiful woman.
Yeah, that's like the one in a million time that's going to happen, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Every other time, they take it back and like 100,000 rival Edo Japan samurai are inside that little ship waiting to be brought inside the walls and then they all burst out of it.
Yeah, that's the reason customs and immigration exist in airports is because... Unfortunately, 99% of the time, it's like a raccoon with norovirus or something. It's
right,
like, okay,
yeah.
Please, this has to stay at the border, cannot come in. So where this paranormal tale differs from many others is that we have multiple written records documenting this story. There are actually three books written in the 19th century that tell this story. The Toen Shosetsu, or Tales from the Rabbit Garden, written in 1825. The Diary and Stories of Castaways, from 1835. And the Ume no Chiri, or Dust of the Apricot, written in 1844.
These all sound very irrelevant. One was about a rabbit garden?
Apricot dust? I was starting to think Google Translate did me a disservice, guys. I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board in this one. Maybe my 30 mins at the Japanese border didn't teach me enough. Did I mention that the woman turned out to be a giant apricot?
It's actually the twist at the end. Fishermen were hungry as shit. They were delirious. They hadn't eaten for days. They opened up a boat and all they saw was a giant apricot.
They thought a borderline peach was a Victoria's Secret model.
The mind sees what it wants. It's a giant, delicious apricot.
And whilst there are some differences between these stories that are just a few decades apart, they all hit the same main points of the story. And this, Rory, is the point in the episode where I am about to blow your mind and blow this case wide open. Because you see, these books have illustrations of what the fisherman described.
Wow, okay, cool. Because I was going to say, I mean, it's a weird story so far. I wouldn't necessarily go as far as paranormal. It's just a weird boat with a small woman.
So far.
Yeah.
Wait till you feast your eyes on these.
Oh, wow. All right, guys. This is a lot. The boat is a lot weirder than that. I'm going to stop calling it a boat from the start.
Right off the bat, a boat is a giant red herring.
Yeah, this is a f***ing UFO. This is a dome, an alien dome.
Whenever I started researching this, I was very alarmed to see the first image, I have to say.
This is insane. My Japanese reading is a little rusty. Mm-hmm. But again, it looks like, they've even labeled certain parts of the ship. Oh, I thought the woman was holding a giant block of cheese, but I presume that is the box clutching onto.
Wow. Yeah. I was so focused on the UFO, I actually forgot about the woman.
You're like, yeah, I didn't even look at the woman. That is an apricot. That is an absolute apricot.
The boat's an apricot, the woman's a peach, and the goddamn box is a nectarine.
Filled with dust.
I got to paint the picture for the listeners here. I'll post these photos on Patreon as well. But these images are very like what you would expect if you went to the British Museum or a Japanese National Museum and looked at Edo period images. The style of the woman that's depicted, the style of writing, even just the paper itself that it's written on, it is all like 200 years old. And then right beside that is a UFO.
Yeah. It's really strange. As you said, this is like going to the British Museum, going to the Japanese section, binge watching a series of the X-Files,
right,
holding your breath until you're just about to pass out, and then looking up at the transcripts. And I think this is what you would see.
Right, that's a pretty good explanation.
Like these mad scribbles, UFO drawings, a woman clutching a box looks like a brick of cheese.
These are illustrations from 1825 depicting a story from 1803. So suddenly the picture of this story has become a lot clearer. Are we looking at an Edo period description of a close encounter of the third kind? I'll say that not so annoying. Are we looking at an Edo period description of a close encounter of the third kind?
I was so ready for you to redo it, but like twice as annoying. Are we looking at any depictions? Like,
oh my god, lower your voice.
Of the third kind. Oh my god.
Of the third kind.
Sorry, let me try that again. Less annoying. Jesus. You know this is bad, right?
And out of all the crazy details of this story so far, one of the most valuable is that the fisherman saw the symbols of an unknown language through the windows of this craft.
Mm.
So what do you make of the handful of symbols here that are depicted on more than one of these books?
What Kit is referring to is four symbols drawn down vertically that are obviously trying to send some sort of message. I'm going to try and decipher them right now.
Cool. Just like, it's like Malcolm Gladwell's Blink. It's like, we don't even need to have to study this. Let's just trust the human mind. Just snap judgment. Let's do it.
Let's do it. First symbol. It looks like a sun and a mountaintop.
Right.
I think that means...
holidays, like a sunny location, like, oh, like, ooh, like sunbathing on the beach. I think they're going on holiday, potentially.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So holiday.
Right.
Next one looks like a weird little cactus thing coming out of the ground. So holiday cactus.
Yeah.
The next one is two balls joined at the ends of an X. So I think that's like a, like some sort of like,
you said you were going to do like a snap judgment, just like a really quick, just going to just throw it right out there.
It was snappy. So holiday cactus.
Uh-huh.
And then this one, we got this third one that coming in here. And it looks a lot like we got those two balls and we got the X.
Yeah, you're describing it again. We're stalling.
It is.
Your tongue is just spinning around in circles. This is really hard.
I had to say what it is. Ooh, I would, you know, so think about what we got so far.
I mean, my God. Yeah, everyone knows.
Think about what we got. Mountain.
Mountain and the sun.
Cactus. Found in the desert.
Yeah.
Comes from the Latin to cack.
Some people drink,
the water harnessed inside. Could that be some relevance to this next symbol?
How about I talk about the next one and then we'll just like, it'll give you a little more time to talk about the next one.
Okay. Okay. I think I'm going to get it. I think I was just about to get it. And you,
okay.
You f***ed it now because my train of thought is gone.
Really?
I just don't know what I don't know what
I'll give you as much time as you want. If you just had it, I feel like you can get it again.
Cool. All right. So, what was it? It was cactus, right? The first one? No, that was second one.
That was
cactus.
The second one. We're on the third one.
From the Latin cac to cac.
I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional here, but no, it's just not. Stop saying it because it's not true.
Right.
You're just stalling.
And the third symbol, it's the two balls.
Right.
And the line.
Dude, don't stress about
it.
This isn't live.
Sorry. Look, people are going to take this shit as gospel, all right? So I need to nail this.
Probably won't.
The third one obviously means skip rope or handcuffs. Possibly handcuffs. Skip cuffs, we'll say.
Fine.
Or cuff up, whichever you prefer.
None of them make sense, so all let's right. just stick with one and move on. Okay?
All right, we'll
skip
do...
Skip cuffs. Fine.
Skip cuffs. And then we have the first symbol, which is a mountain, and the sun again.
Uh-huh.
But now there's two suns.
Wow.
So some sort of like space holiday on like Mars or something, or some planet where there's two
moons.
And
how do you think Skip Cuff fits into that picture?
Skip Cuff is obviously some sort of alien recreational activity that I don't know what the shit it means.
This babe was obviously on her way to Earth for an intergalactic Skip Cuff tournament.
Where you have to use a jump rope, but handcuffed to presumably a cactus.
I mean, am I crazy to be reading that into these symbols?
Sorry, let me say that in a less annoying voice. Am I crazy?
So much more annoying.
To be reading it in that voice. So I think what this, if this was the symbol that was inside the ship.
Yeah.
I think that this woman.
Right.
Was going on holiday.
Right.
From another planet. Mm. She's come down to go on holiday. Thought she was going to land in the desert where the cactus are, Latin for to cack, to enjoy some skip cuff.
Yeah.
Then she has realized, I'm not out at the right planet because I wanted the one that had two moons.
Mm.
So she's drawn that at the end there. And I think that really sums it up.
Well, cool. That was just illuminating. We've really broken new ground. Needless to say, no Japanese academic researchers in the last 100 years have thought of skip cuff holiday.
Cool. We doing conclusions now? Is that we good?
Well, some UFO investigators have put forward a very exciting theory about these symbols. In 1980, in England, there was a UFO event known as the Rendlesham Forest Incident, sometimes called Britain's Roswell.
Ooh.
And this is kind of an aside. I think we should definitely cover this in a different episode. We've had a bunch of requests for it. We just have not got around to it. But I bring it up because symbols were found at the site of the Rendlesham Forest Incident too. And they have a lot in common with the symbols from this Japanese craft in 1803.
What? Yeah. Yeah. What Kit is referring to is unfortunately not Skip Cuff. I don't think that that game lasted the
didn't make it to England.
Time.
Made it all across the fucking galaxy.
Yeah.
And then didn't get from Japan to England.
So the symbol he's referring to is the mountain with two suns.
Yeah.
That is the, we're seeing a very similar symbol in this case.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As well.
And there's too many to get into, but amateur investigators and professional investigators have tried to make links between this Japanese discovery in the 1800s, seemingly before all other accounts of UFOs, and the symbol seen at more modern UFO sightings, such as Rendlesham, such as Roswell. So Rory, I have presented you a case today. Listen, sometimes we present cases that are meticulously put together, and I come in with my own preconceived notions about where I think this is going. This is a goddamn scattergun episode.
Yeah.
I've presented a case that's over 200 years old from Edo period Japan, and it seems to in some way mirror some of the most beloved cases of the 21st goddamn century. How do we go about picking apart what is truly paranormal here and what isn't?
This is an interesting case, and thank you for bringing this to my attention, Kit. I've learned a lot today, but put this in my, like, put on, like, my TED Talk voice effect when I'm, like, talking to a whole group of people.
Of course.
Of course, yeah. I've learned a lot today. I think we all have. I think a wise man once said that math is the universal language of the universe.
Yeah.
The universal language of the universe.
That's really smart, actually.
And I think today we've learned that that is a lie. That is a goddamn lie. Shapes are the universal language of the universe, not math. If I meet an alien and I tell him, when I go, hey, how's it going, bro? 1026518 5. You little piece of three. You know, I'm calling him out here. You little mother six and son of an eight.
You're obviously not fluent in math, by the way.
Also, those are very endearing comments that I'm making. You think they're rude, but they're actually really, they're nice as one. Hell no. I'm not going to talk to him in numbers. I need to be like, hey, what's up, triangle? Circle, circle, mountain forest. Little cactus in your freaking skip cuffs. Am I having a stroke?
You do know that shapes are maths as well.
What? What do you mean?
You know, like, so you said, like, a triangle, for example. Like,
yeah, sure.
A triangle is defined by...
Bing, bang, boom.
A certain surface area defined by having a number of angles, like, at specific angles of incidence and...
Is a shape, though. It's not a number.
Sure, but you define it through maths. Like, that's why they exist, is because... Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense, does it? Hey, let me count to 10. 1, 2, triangle, square, circle. Yeah, I don't think so, man. Nice try, though. Any other questions?
You still your TED Talk.
Any other questions from the audience?
The stage manager comes up.
I am so sorry. We do not know who this man is.
You're like,
you four square triangle? You goddamn triangle? You goddamn piece of three? I'll kill you. Anyway, are there any other questions from the audience?
1,000 hands raise up.
Shit. I've been Roy Bowers. Thank you. Good night.
Like, you're on stage. You have no idea how close to the truth you are. You're like, triangle 3, 2, 1. You goddamn triangle square. Yeah. There's like a CIA agent with a sniper. He's like, I got a clear shot, sir. Will I take him out? He's like, no, wait to see what he has to say.
He's either a genius or an idiot. 2 seconds later, I'm just like, what? What the f- fucking square, sir. And I was like, it's fine. Put down your guns. He's just mad. He almost had the recipe for immortality, but he said three instead of triangle. That's the recipe for poison. Let him go. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm learning a lot about these theories, that there is some sort of language being spoken by these extraterrestrials. Because when we looked at the case of the Eben,
yeah,
where they go to the planet, is the planet called Eben?
Oh, the Ebens from Zeta Reticuli live on the planet Serpo, of course. Ass hat.
We you're three. that planet. Even when we looked at that story,
why swear and then say three? Like, there's no consistency. You're just saying half your words as shapes.
That was one of the TED Talk questions. Someone get this little nerd out of here. Even that planet that is inhabited by extraterrestrials,
right?
We heard that it was more of like a hub for like loads of different species visiting, and they all, none of them spoke in like a unified language,
right?
You know, like the humans didn't understand the Ebens. Maybe the Ebens didn't understand some of these other dudes who were like coming and visiting. So I think if we're gonna take it as fact that some of these UFO encounters have been using the same symbols, then that possibly means we're dealing with the same species.
Maybe more so than multiple races of aliens have been visiting the Earth, but rather we've been visited by the same beautiful bastards for over 200 years.
Yeah, and you know what? That actually makes a bit more sense.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the universe is freaking massive. Mm-hmm. And maybe these aliens who are visiting with all these symbols, maybe they're literally like a billion light years away.
Mm.
But they're the only ones that have been visiting us, because the next furthest species is like 100 billion light years away. Like, it could be, it's so vast that maybe the only reason that there's some sort of correlation is because there's only one species intelligent enough within our reach.
Definitely the most exciting theory about what's happening here is that extraterrestrials came to Earth in the 1800s, washed up on the shores of Hitachi, and have been coming ever since. Roswell, Rendlesham Forest Incident, and so on.
Yeah.
But there are other theories out there that we better talk about, and some of them shit all over this case, and some of them are different, like parallel paranormal theories. So one thing that kind of tripped people up about this story is the fact that the fishermen immediately send this woman away as soon as she arrives. They didn't seem to try and keep her there or try and show her to anyone else.
Right.
They just kind of sent her on her way and presumably told people about the incident. But we do have to remember that this story took place during the period of Sakoku, or foreign isolation policy, where people were pretty much not allowed to enter Japan from the mid-1600s through to the mid-1800s. It only ended about 50 years after this story. So the men realistically might have sent her away knowing that they or her would get in trouble if she was found out.
Right.
The trouble with this also means that fishermen off the coast of Hitachi weren't exactly the most worldly gentlemen.
Right.
You had to be living in Nagasaki or Hokkaido to have ever basically met someone from another country. And even then, it was only going to be China or the Netherlands or Korea, basically.
Yeah.
So they really didn't have much contact with anyone else. Some people have made the argument, what if just British ship or any sort of other ship, an American ship, washed up on the shore and it was just a white person, would they have thought they were some completely foreign entity?
Yeah, because I mean, like, that would appear otherworldly.
Yeah.
If you've never seen anything like that in your life before.
And we do know that in the 1800s, other parts of the world in the West did have like these medals and glasses and everything that just weren't common in Japan.
Yeah.
But the possibility also exists that maybe this being, this woman, didn't come from America or Britain or China or Korea, and didn't come from outer space either, but maybe came from somewhere else. They did say that she turned up in a USO, an unidentified submerged object, like a boat of some description, turned up with red hair, very beautiful, human-like, but speaking an unknown, distant language, writing in symbols that no one had ever seen before, with futuristic technology that the locals in Japan had no idea of.
Should we say it on three? We're thinking the same thing.
I think we are, brother. Me and you, we've been in this business for decades. Our brains are in simpatico.
All right, we'll do it on go. You ready?
Three, two, one. Atlantis. Mermaids.
Oh, not far.
Did we say mermaids are real or not?
Yeah, Atlantis was real. Mermaids, yeah. Not real.
Interesting that you went for mermaids then.
New evidence has come to light, evidently. I mean, geographically, you were a bit askew, right?
Well, a little bit, but she was drifting, didn't know where she was. There's a ton of possibilities here. I think it's about time, like every episode, we have to decide whether it is truly paranormal or not. Is this a ship coming from Russia? It's just a human they've never seen before. Is this a runaway from Atlantis? Is this an escape pod that came off an alien craft from Zeta Reticuli and crashed onto Earth?
So many options.
What are you saying?
Well, I think it's safe to be a little skeptical because we're dealing with fishermen here. We have the actual phrase, a fisherman's tale.
right.
Like, this is a profession of men and women who are known to exaggerate stories to the point where there's a whole phrase about it.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, if a fisherman almost catches a big fish, they go home to the pub that night and they're like, a literal whale on the line.
Yeah.
And I couldn't bag that sucker. It was like the Moby Dick of Japanese serpents.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they're telling people. And in reality, it was maybe like a big old 10 foot fish. So now we're dealing with this, as we said, like possibly someone from like Russia or Europe or one of these countries that they have encountered. And again, that fisherman style storytelling exaggerates the details and blows this into a way bigger thing than it is. The only thing is the drawings.
We really got to come back to those things.
I feel like I'd be doing a disservice if I didn't go back to the drawings because it's just a UFO.
It's a straight up UFO. Everything about it.
Yeah. Like
the paneling. like that is a children's drawing of a UFO.
That's insane.
There is a solar panel. There's a little circular hatch to look out of.
You should have never called it a boat. In a million years, never a boat. That's the only thing that's throwing me because even in the illustrations, it's pretty consistent.
This story hinges on one thing. If we take the fisherman's word for it, if this is true, if they retold this as accurately as the books reproduced it throughout the 1800s, then we have a paranormal case on our hands. There's just nothing else for it. Nothing about it makes sense. The craft is evidently not from that time period or
right.
Nationality. However, like I said, it hinges on whether these fishermen are telling the truth. One fact that disturbs me, that messes me up with this story, is that this is a really popular story in Japan. Academics have taken the time to look into it, and they have minor issues with the story, such as supposedly the name of the place where this takes place doesn't exist. We don't know if that means it was lost to history. You know, the names of all these provinces have changed since that time.
Right.
The story itself, the woman with the box, seems to mirror some other Japanese folk tales. The kind of a similar ilk of maybe like a princess washes up on a shore and she has a precious item. These stories throughout history that seemed a little too close for comfort and made academics think, could this be another kind of myth that's just been weirdly reproduced as fact throughout time? But I will say, the pictures of the craft, those are pretty convincing. And even further again, the fact that those symbols reproduced, why would someone with a mythical encounter with a mythical princess from a far off land, why would they make up a symbolic language to print in a book?
So specific and weird.
Maybe when we investigate the Rendlesham Forest incident, we can look a little further into these symbols and try and work out, is it likely that these are coming from the same source, the same goddamn star system?
Absolutely.
But until then, I don't think we got enough to say that this happen the way.
Unfortunately, not. It's a no this week.
It's double no this week.
Damn it!
Hey, I'm gonna say it. I hope this is like the first one in this paranormal life history that I can come back to and reverse my no into a yes. I would love that to happen, for new evidence to come forth.
Exactly.
Let's try and make that happen. Thank you to the beautiful listener that sent in that suggestion. I think you're the first person in this paranormal life history to not even attach a name or any information other than the link to this story in
smart.
Your email.
So, very smart.
Thanks for that. You know who you are. If you have your own thoughts about this case, you can send them in to thisparanormallifepodcast@gmail.com. Alternatively, hit us up on the socials, twitter.com/thisparalife or facebook.com/thisparanormallife. There'll probably be people in the Facebook group discussing this one. You can find that on Facebook. Look for the Secret Society. Good luck. You're never going to find it.
Absolutely not. And if you do, good luck getting in. I am a mean mod. I ban on the slightest offense.
Yeah.
You know, someone once posted, hey, thanks for letting me into the group. I'm really excited to like make some friends here.
Yep.
Banned him.
Yep.
Banned him. Because you don't make friends in a secret society. You make brothers and sisters.
Naive piece of three. You actually banned your own mother from the group. That was
absolutely
pretty rude. I think she literally signed up. She just wanted to send a little sweet message. She was like, hey, Rory, glad to... And you were like, banned!
Banned!
Can't use my real name.
She tried to support me on the Patreon. Banned! And I doxed her the next day as a warning.
She tried to text me on my birthday. Banned! She tried to hug me in real life. Banned!
Shunned!
Hug denied.
Get out of here, triangle.
So I hope you've enjoyed this story about the Itsurubune legend in Japan. But if you can't get enough of our paranormal tales, then you can head on over to patreon.com/thisparanormallife, where there is a treasure trove, a borderline unidentified submerged object full of, instead of beautiful women and cakes and glasses of water, there is a beautiful trove of podcasts.
Exactly.
And stuff to check out there. So for just $2 a month, you can get shout outs, bonus episodes, and t-shirts. So if you can't get enough, that's the way to do it. We don't run ads on this podcast. So the only way to support This Paranormal Life is through our Patreon. And at the end of every episode, we like to take the time to shout out people who have supported us on Patreon right here in the podcast. Let's go. Thank you to Abigail Wood.
Abigail Wood, you are a beautiful forest of support. You are a mighty oak that stands, and we build a treehouse on you. May the blades of deforestation never touch your path, Abigail.
May the Californian forest fires never raise your part of the woods.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you also to Chrissy Klabaka.
Chrissy Klabaka smokes tobacco. That's right. I think in high school, they were called Chrissy the Sissy. So took up smoking pretty hardcore to try and look a little edgier, look a little cooler. I gotta say, I'm digging it. Because you know what's the coolest thing in the world? Putting your life at risk, I think. That's why like the coolest guys in the world are like firefighters, astronauts.
Those guys who do parkour on the top of really tall buildings.
Yeah. Seedy guys in basements playing Russian roulette. Like, those are the most badass guys in the world. Bullfighters. Did I say bullfighters already? Now, imagine you were a bullfighter, but also you smoked like Chrissy, like a goddamn chimney.
Right.
You were automatically the coolest person in the entire room.
Because smoking's kind of going out of fashion, but we need to stop that. Because it's actually... I'm not going any further with this. Thank you also to Katya Caulfield.
Thanks for the support, kitty Katya. Meow. Don't get too close to this kitten because she's got claws. I learned that the hard way when I tried to say thanks and she freaking scratched my face.
You look like Scar from Lion King.
It was deep, man. It was a real deep cut.
Was it really a kitty cat or was it a...
It was a grown
mountain
woman.
Lion, okay.
It was a grown woman who I startled.
With a knife.
Thank you for the support. I'm sorry I spooked you, Katya.
This kitty cat meow's got a machete.
Got blades.
Thank you also to Bronwyn Duke.
Don't ever try and best Bronwyn at anything, all right? Because Bronwyn gon' win.
It's right there in the name.
It's gonna happen. Bronwyn gon' win. Chess. Sports. Checkers. Snakes and ladders.
So board games,
mostly
and sports.
Mostly board games. Actually, very few sports. Bronwyn gone lose. It's most the physical activities. But when your brain's involved,
Bronwyn is kind of a Groot-style character. Can only really say Bron win or Bron lose.
Yeah, yeah, that's really all he's got in his vocabulary, which is weird because he's really smart at a lot of these games. But I don't really know what else is going on in the old noodle. But thank you so much there, Bronwyn. I hope you gone win for the rest of your life.
Thank you also to Finn Butler. You might think from a name like Finn Butler that this person has exceptional manners.
Right.
The service of an angel looks after his guests. But I'm actually far from the truth. One of the rudest people I've ever had the disservice of meeting.
Oh, yeah, big time. I mean, like, the first time I met him, I was like, oh, Finn Butler, 2 scrambled eggs, please. And he had the gall to slap me.
He's actually a Taekwondo black belt as well.
Yeah.
So he didn't take too kindly to the old chop chop.
Which was weird because his second name is Butler. So I was like, you know, make my bed, sir. And he roundhoused me.
Yeah.
Which is kind of rude, a little mean. Not what I would expect from a butler.
Not at all.
But
he did wear a tuxedo, though.
Yeah, exceptionally well dressed.
Mm, yeah. You know, don't judge a book by its cover, I guess. Thanks, Finn.
Don't judge Finn by the butler. That's what I say.
Thank you also to Manny Villalba.
Manny in the bank, son. Thank you, Manny, for the money. We appreciate your support immensely. It means the world to us because we need as much money as possible. The commune is an expensive proposition. Many banks have shunned us because we've been asking for too much money. So the more money we get, the more... They say the more money, more problems. More money, more problems. And that hasn't been the case. A lot of our problems are due to not having enough money.
Yeah. Now we got all the money we want in the world because we got Manny Villalba on our side.
So thank you.
Thank you also to Richard Luke Dix. Richard Luke got rich by fluke. That's right. He stumbled out of bed one day and happened upon a bag full of cash. He became rich overnight. And yes, the mob were on his tail, but he was pretty evasive, moved to the Caribbean, and he's been living large ever since.
He's got 2 freaking first names. That's how elusive he is. They're like, we're looking for a guy named Richard. It's like, my name is Luke now. So they're like, oh, well, let us know if you find him.
That's better than having 14 passports. 2 first names?
2 first names. That's confusing as hell.
He's a very much a Matt Damon born of himself. Thanks for taking time out of your busy crime schedule to help us out, Richard Luke. And thank you, lastly but not leastly, to Ryan Seal.
It's Ryan Seal himself, washed up on the harbor, throwing any coins and salvage that he's found from the bottom of the ocean, just chucking it. I mean, half of it's garbage, but we don't have the balls to tell him. It's like a lobster cage, it's bottle caps. But God, he's just doing it with so much heart.
Whenever he first washed up, like those Japanese peasants, we peered into his little craft to see if it was some sort of beautiful maiden with tails from a long-forgotten galaxy.
Right.
But it was Ryan.
We've loved the little lovable sea scamp ever since. So thank you so much for your support. Keep the bottle caps coming, brother, or Seal. I wonder if there's any way to work out how many people pull their pledges after they've got their shout out. It was a funny thing I had to do at the live show, which was just like, I would introduce myself to someone and they'd be like, oh, my name is X. And I would remember so specifically just being like, oh, Michael Smith, you little piece of shit. Just a flashback to me calling them out of the podcast. So, I do apologize if we offended any of you. Thank you for your support. It means the world to us. Whether you are a human, whether you are a seal, whether you are avoiding the mob, or whether your name is Wood, thank you so much for all of your support. It means the world to us.
And that just about wraps it up for this week's episode. We will see you on Tuesday for a brand new paranormal tale.
See you later, folks.
Ciao.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.